Mr. Abish, Reel 10. Could you describe your journey to Rakov?
Right, we went and because we spoke Russian, most of the Russians were sitting inside the train, and all the Hungarian civilians were going on top. And as you know, at the time in summer 45, there's plenty of food in Hungary. You know, it's a rich agricultural country. The Russians didn't, most probably the farmers still brought plenty of food to Budapest. You could see them traveling on the trains, bringing all kinds of things, and then go through the rich pustas, you know, the various towns, very rich farming land, and they got everything possible. But in Czechoslovakia, where we left, everything was short. Eventually, there were all kinds of things we saw on the trains, raping the Russians, you know, throwing off the women of the trains, or letting the Hungarians come on the train, in the small towns, you know, with the food on, let them leave the food and then chuck them off the train. Right? But we were still inside there, you know, well, you know, sort of carrying along.
They left you alone, did
Yeah,
they?
yeah. We eventually arrived in Mamre Sighet, which is in Romania. No, we came through Chop. Chop is a very important junction. This is where it's like Crewe, you know, it's a complete junction, it goes a different area. And this we changed trains there, and we go on the other part, goes via Romania. We arrived in Sighet, Mamre Sighet, and we were arrested at the train. In the meantime, all the way along, there was all kind of, the Russians were very quick in shooting. You know, anything I've seen, shoot people, you know, far away, you know, sort
For
of on
what
the train.
particular reasons?
I don't know, must have been something, I didn't see what implemented, what's it called for, but I've seen shooting at people. They were very easy, you know. Not the NKVD, at that time it was the NKVD, not the KGB. But the Russian soldiers themselves were afraid of the NKVD. Because in Budapest, prior to that, wherever you went, women weren't safe. They were collecting davai chassi, I mean, give me your watch, you know, immediately, or just taking whatever they wanted. But whenever you reported it to the NKVD, to the military, you know, to the police, the Russian soldiers were afraid of them. I arrived in Mamre Sighet, and we were arrested by the NKVD, by the Russian secret police. Where we are, what are we? Where are we going? And then we had to explain that where we were, and we're going back to our hometown, which is only about 30 kilometers away. We roamed around this town in Mamre Sighet, and I must say, I've never seen so many Russian soldiers, armless, limbless, you know, completely. There must have been a gathering place, not to ship them all together into Russia at once, it was probably in small doses, and this is where they were gathering. There were literally thousands of them in this town, all wounded, you know, Russian soldiers from the war. And by the way, everywhere in Hungary at the time during the summer of 45, train loads of all kinds, train loads of machinery dismantled from various factories that were carried to Russia. Everywhere the stations were full of them. Also, German prisoners were carried, train loads of them. And especially I noticed that the Ukrainians who were captured by the Russians, though they fought with the Germans, were actually chained down in the trains inside. And they didn't look much better than we did, the Germans, and being very hot, and they were asking for water, 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 you know, begging for water. The Russians, I don't think, made any difference between SS and Wehrmacht or anything. To them, Germans were Germans. I remember one evening we were trying to get a train, you know, just hop any train that was going from here to Rakov, and it was on the sidings there, and there were about two, three train loads of Germans, you know, prisoners who were taken to Russia. And I started to speaking to one of the Russian soldiers there, and explained where I was and so on, and so he said, if you want to kill a few, I'll give you my machine gun and I'll get a few out. So I said, I'm sorry, I'm not going to stoop down to that. And I didn't do it, of course. And eventually we caught a freight train. And there was my sister, my future brother-in-law, and another boy from a different town that I used to go to school, which I met in Budapest, although he wasn't in the same camp as me. And we eventually arrived, I remember, early in the morning, going through, to come to Rakov, and the train wasn't going to stop, so we had to jump off. And we jumped off, the three of us, and the other one, the other boy was going on to the next town, which is called Yasina. So as soon as we came through the station into the town, seemed very dead and quiet. Of course, most of the people were taken away from the center of the town, where the majority of the Jews lived, and so on. And it was still early in the morning, and we were arrested by Russians again, and were taken to was the Czechs built a big hotel called Turistitsky Dom, and this was the headquarters of the Russians, and interrogated for half an hour or so, and then we were let out. And then as started getting the morning, and then we started meeting a few people, from Jewish people in the hometown and so on. Then, of course, we went to the house where we were taken away from. I went to dig up those things that are hidden originally before we left. The candlesticks are still there, and all the things that are hidden, nobody knew about it. The next door neighbor, who originally shopped us, tried to complete turncoat, of course. He's Hungarian, afraid of the Russians. He wanted to invite us to come to his house to stay, Said, no dice. Eventually, we actually stayed in town. We didn't stay in our own home.
Did you actually have a row with this Hungarian, or was there any...
I didn't. I was so disgusted, just ignored them. I mean, there's those things I was more looking. Of course, the main thing is to come to the town, is hoping against hope that somebody else from the family would have come back. But of course, it was looking away, and only my sister's alive. So I lost my parents and four brothers, plus lots and lots of families in general. We were there a little while, and remember, this was fairly in our area. Winter is winter, spring is spring, and summer is very hot. There's a lot of mountains, a lot of things, and I remember going to the swimming pools, meeting the Russian officers there. And after about a couple of weeks, they arranged for the wedding. So my sister got married, and a few Jewish people, there was even officiated by some, well, most people could read or were educated in the Jewish way. And there were a lot of Russian Jewish officers who were there as well. And I remember in a great hall, they had dancing and all the things. And one Russian officer turned around to me and says, as soon after the wedding, you and your few friends, the young ones, you better not stay here because they're going to take you away to Russia. What you do is don't even go to the station to go leave. Walk to the next town or next village and catch a train from there and go west, go back west. That's exactly what we did the next day. Oh, by the way, the man we bought the house from when we were supposed to go to Palestine, we sold the original, but wanted to buy the house back from us. So he offered us 15,000 pengus, which maybe it was a lot of money or not, but money didn't mean anything to me anyway. Anyway, we sold the house to him, we got the pengus, I gave it, left it with my brother-in-law, right? They stayed on for a while. And we got the next day, we walked to the next place, and we got back to Mamursiget. Mamursiget we stayed, and there were lots of people coming around from everywhere already, There were also places similar like in Budapest. And in the meantime, I was still on my own then, because my friend who met his mother in Budapest stayed in Budapest. He didn't come back to Rakov. There were a few of us, and from Budapest, from Sziget, we hired a locomotive, just an engine. And we was top of the coal, and we gone to Sziget. Sziget is in deep in Hungary itself, not Mamursiget, Sziget. We got to Sziget, and from Sziget we got back to Budapest. I got back to Budapest. From Sziget, once we got to Sziget, from Sziget station, actually a few of us went to Budapest back. So we come back to this place where the gathering was. And now there were more and more people coming back. And now people started coming back from Siberia, from Russia, saying how bad they had it. But once they heard our stories, their stories were little ones. You see? at least they didn't kill him there. The Russians were hungry, they were hungry, right? But at least they must have managed to survive.
What have they been doing in Siberia?
Well, working in the forests and all kinds of things. You know, there's a lot of people who ran away originally to Russia or from Poland and so on. And in Budapest, there was already quite a few of those people that came back from Russia, from Siberia. And then, of course, found out that my cousin in Budapest is in the Jewish hospital. And when I went to Jewish hospital, my other cousin, who was head nurse in this Jewish very big hospital, so of course, went to visit them and so on. And in the meantime, we heard that in Bucharest, they're giving 1 million lira for anybody that comes to Bucharest. You know, the American joint is giving 1 million lira, which was a lot of money. So I decided, a friend of mine, we're going to go, but this time we were traveling on top of a train. We didn't go very far. I remember we ended up somewhere, a place called Shatru Uihel, which is also a farming town, quite known, near Mishkolts. And my friend, as we're going around the bridges, he got knocked down by a bridge. Going under the bridge, he got knocked down. So I had to take him to hospital and so on. So that ended my journey to Bucharest. But I ended up in this Shatru Uihel. And there was a place called Habunim. Habunim means a camp for youngsters, preparation to go to Palestine for kibbutz. So I went to join there, but I stayed there a couple of days and didn't like it. So then I went to a coffee house and there were some people there, and I had money on me, you know, because I had money for American joint and so on. And they were selling cigarettes in the boxes of hundreds, in cases, Paul. And so all the money I had, I bought cigarettes. Actually, in fact, one fellow took me to the factory. The factory was still open, making cigarettes. So I bought a case full of cigarettes, all packed in hundreds. And I took the whole case back to Budapest. When I came to Budapest...
Can I just ask you, why didn't you like it in the Habunim?
No, it was... I wanted to get about, you know. Sort of, it was too closed for me, you know, too restricted. Right? I haven't, you know... I have to move, sort of thing. Yeah, I couldn't find my place. And bought those cigarettes and I took them back to Budapest. I went to a special place called Chiputso, you know, where the trading is, where all the black markets and things like that happen. And I was offered 100 times the price that I paid for it. Which I got the money. And my pockets were stuffed with money. So one day I go to a cinema. I buy a ticket and I take out a big wad of money to pay for my ticket. The girl there, and there was a policeman not far from there, she went to call the police. Police took me into a room. She said, where did you get all that money from? She said, I sold my house in Germany. And sold my house at home, you know, to a man. So he said, where do you come from? I said, from Rakov. I said, in the meantime, they called the NKVD. And there's a big crowd gathering outside already at the cinema. He took me in this room and started talking. He said, I was stationed there in the army in your town, all that sort of thing. And he told me, he says, listen, you give me half of the money and we go out because the jeep is coming any minute, you know, the incoming day. And sooner as I come out, I will shout to catch you, but you run as fast as you can. So as I came out, I gave him half of the money. And this cinema wasn't very far across. It was a big park called Ungle Park, which is a big fairground, you know, fairground park. As I came out, there was a big crowd there, and a Russian jeep pulls up. I start running. He shouts, Fogmak, which means catch him, catch him. And I'm running as fast as I could, and I got lost in the crowd in the park, and that was it. You know, that's an adventure of another nature. Eventually, we stayed there again in this place where the gatherings were, and meeting more and more people, and now giving information. Your brother may have been there, or I'm sorry, he's dead, or, you know, giving all the factual things to various people, especially from my hometown, where there were a lot of people. And then eventually, my sister and my brother-in-law came back to Budapest. They took a flat in Budapest. And I was still going around, you know, doing all kind of business. This time we went three of us. went back to this town to buy cigarettes, but the factory was closed, so we already had to buy them second hand. So we brought with us 9 cases with all the money we had to buy those cigarettes. Well, I said, if they sell them in Budapest for 100 times the price, where are they selling them? Turned out in Prague, you don't sell them a hundred. For one cigarette, you can get in a hotel. For one cigarette, you can do all kinds of things. But how do you get them to Prague? Right, so we dressed the semi like Russian partisans, you know, with a belt, a cross, and this jackets, Russian jackets, and so on. We spoke Russian fluent.
Where had you got that clothing from?
Well, I could get it in the markets and all the things. And big markets in Budapest. No problem there. Anyway, the three of us set off, including my little friend, who was mother there, and another boy who came from near a village near our town. So we have set over those 9 cases, and we arrive in Bratislava, Prešbuk. Oh, you only got to turn around. The Russians are the biggest thieves on earth. You got to just turn around, and it disappears. Then we went inside the train, and we were sitting inside the train. We had all a few, only left about 6 pieces of luggage, and it was all stacked with cigarettes, hundreds of cigarettes a day. One Russian gets up, opens one of the cases, and goes around in the train, gives everybody a box of cigarettes, including us. We didn't say it was ours, you know.
Why not? Do you think he would have taken exception? Or?
What? We were not supposed to do that. I remember even some of the Russian officers undoing the cigarettes, taking an ordinary newspaper and rolling it, and they say, "Это хорошо, this is good," you know. Not, you know, I'm doing just tobacco and rolling it in newspapers. That's how this, even the offices used to smoke like this. This is very good. Anyway, cut a long story short, we came to Brin with all the pinching. We ended up with a case each. From there, we came to Prague. We settled ourselves in the Imka Hotel, which is like YMCA in translation. But the porter for one cigarette, we got the rooms, you know, the things. And things were very bad in Prague because the food was rationed, things were very short. Anyway, we hold on to the cigarettes and eventually we sold, you know. So we went back to Budapest. Of course, that source dried up. So afterwards, we were dealing in money, buying Russian rubles. German money didn't mean anything. That was worthless. Buying dollars and buying pounds, sterling, right? So, no, it was not any reason. It was quite legal as far as that time is concerned. But one day I ended up in a place. There was a raid, you know, the whole square, you know. And all the dollars were flying off in the bottom of the trousers.
It was
not
illegal
mine. I managed to escape.
It was illegal to deal in currency.
Officially it was legal, but under our law it wasn't legal. It was legal, you understand what I mean? Because we had to fend for ourselves, sort of thing. Anyway, one incident happened, which is a place called Hotvon, because I kept on, this is prior to what I'm just saying now, and I wouldn't pay for the trains. So the conductor actually took me off the train to the Nachalnik. Chalnik means the head of the, you know, the Russian officer who's in charge of the thing there in the station. There's a great big, huge hunk of a man sitting there, making tea there, and so on, sitting and reporting that I don't want to pay for my ticket on the train. So he turns around to me and says, "Where do you come from?" You know, I said, "Where I've been," and so on. He said, "Sit down, have a tea with me." The train was holed up for 1 hour, right? And he told him to, what's his name? And he told him that I can go on the train as much as I like. You know?
So why did he do that?
Why? Because as he still considered the Hungarians enemies, in the sense, you know. And, you know, there was in Germany and all that sort of thing, so he didn't want to know. Well, a case has happened where a friend of mine's bicycle was stolen. So I went to the Russian to complain. He says, "Well, what's, why? You had it before, now let him have it." Sort of that attitude. But the Russian soldiers themselves in Budapest, it was chaotic because people were afraid, women were afraid, because they were just open, sheer robbing, you know, people, you know, in the markets and on stations and in the towns and everywhere. Of course, not behind the cloak of the NKVD. I was trying once to go to Vienna, but I had to turn back because they whatever I had on me was taken away by the Russians. So eventually, it's getting a bit. And then in August 1945, I heard about atom bombs being thrown. I mean, I didn't even know what it meant at the time. You know, there was also Americans in Budapest as well. You know, so Americans there as well. So eventually, my sister, I still stayed in Budapest, and my sister and my brother-in-law went off to back to Czechoslovakia. And they settled in Sudetenland, in a place called Děčín Bodenbach in German, but Děčín Podmoklí in Czech. Sudetenland was mostly, originally, the people were mostly Germans. But the Czechs, soon after the war, have all interned them, right? And the towns were fairly empty of people. So they tried to get as many people there as possible. So all you had to do, in the meantime, I was called to come from Budapest to Czechoslovakia, which I did. Came back to Prague, from there I went to this town, which is a twin town called, not very far from Dresden, actually, the other side.
And there, Sudetenland, you mean?
Sudetenland, yes. There, all you had to do is sign a paper, and you get a flat. Sign a paper, you get a farm. Sign a paper, got a Harley motorcycle. So my sister said, you got to settle down now. You got to go to school, back to school. So they enrolled me to an engineering school for 3 days, and 3 days in a garage working as a mechanic. So I was doing all precision engineering and all the things doing. I had a bit of money, but what I didn't know, that the Czechs changed the money overnight, and the money was useless. So, you know, only a certain amount you could get. So the money I put in the bank, well, I was going to school and I didn't earn any wages because as a trainee in Europe in those days, you had to pay to be a trainee, never mind get paid. So I had to live off something so I could draw my own money every month, for my own money from the bank to be able to sustain myself. So I was doing this 3 days, in garage and 3 days in school as well. That was in autumn of 45 and turning. In the meantime, in the late autumn of 1945, I had to go back to Budapest to fetch my cousin, the one who lost a leg during the war, to get her across the border. But the borders were getting tight, and I noticed in Budapest already things were getting tighter. The food was getting not as much as it was in the summer already, because the farmers didn't bring any more freely into town because there was already politically, involvement in the whole thing. So I managed to get my cousin back to through the border, through to Bratislava and then to Prague, and then put her in a sanatorium. There was no purpose in taking her because she still needed treatment and she had to have to get the right leg, you know, artificial leg and so on.
Was there any difficulty in getting across the borders by this time?
Well, I could do anything. You see, all I could do is speak the language and get with the Russians in such a way that I could cross the borders without any papers.
But other people were being restricted by that time.
Yeah. Right. So I got to Prague into a sanatorium, and then I went back to Sudeten and carried on in the schools. And then came winter 1945-46. I remember one particular occasion in the yard, in the garage, there were about 30 Germans helping out, some paving the yard and things like that. So the boss asked me, can you take him home? He gave me a gun and to escort them home. It was dark. To escort them home to their camp where they were, which I volunteered to do. But unfortunately, my sister found the gun and went to the boss and I told them off about it.
Were the Germans being used as forced labor?
We wouldn't say forced, they were just used as labor.
Were they paid for their work?
That I don't know, they stayed in a camp. I don't know whether the governor paid for them or not. But I was very, very lonely there because although there were a lot of girls came back from the camps, but very, very few boys. So I had very few friends of my own age group in the town there. It was mostly girls about. I remember going to dances and I couldn't dance, and I went all the way to 300 kilometers away for the weekend by some friends of mine who were in another town to learn a step of dancing sort of thing, you know. As I say, apart from the school and the work, it was fairly lonely there because I didn't like the place. It was very sort of single. It wasn't enough life there. You know, my age, I wanted a bit more. And I didn't have a lot of friends because hardly a few boys were there. You know, there were very few survivors from the, you know, except lots of girls. Anyway, my boss used to invite me to his home for dinner, and because he played the accordion, I wanted very much to learn to play accordion. And it was very friendly, it was very nice. But one day, we had to fill out forms to get extra rations, because working in a garage is heavier duty work, you get more ration. So on the form was written the religion to fill out. So I filled out the religion, which is Yidovska, which is Jewish. And when I handed it in to him, he looked and he said, "I thought you were Slovak. I didn't know you were Jewish." Anyway, the atmosphere in the garage has changed completely. The other boys started off with me, you know, the whole business. I think he was let down, sort of felt let down.
What sort of things were they saying to you?
Oh, that time it was already happening in Palestine and so on. There's the Arabs are going to drive the Jews out and all that business, you know. But I found anti-Semitism rather stronger than was ever before, you know. Mind you, they themselves were sort of not from the area. They came from other parts of Czechoslovakia. I suppose the youngsters were contaminated, you know, with the things happening during the war and so on. So there, I think it was mostly a letdown. I thought he knew I was Jewish, but he obviously he didn't.
Anyway, you're in Czechoslovakia. Yeah. It was your homeland. Yeah. And coming across anti-Semitism after all you've been through, how did you feel about that?
Well, I feel like I want to get out of it, of there anyway. In the meantime, there were rumors going about that the Russians wanted the people who come from the Carpathian to go back there. There was rumors going about. In the meantime, my brother-in-law decided, and I should go with them. We go back to Germany. From Germany, we either go to America or Palestine or America. Back to 1946, of course. And so we were actually packed. It was in May in 1946, beginning of May, and we actually packed to go to the station. And a card came by post saying that from the Jewish organization in the local town, if I want to go to England, I must report to Prague. So, of course, my sister immediately jumped on the bandwagon. Yeah, I'm not going to go to Germany with them. I must go to England, you know, to go for education and so on and so on. What are you going to do in Germany and so on? So this is where we parted. They went off, I still stayed, and then they gathered the other few in town, and we went by train to Prague. We arrived in Prague. There was a special meeting place, a special area, and they were actually looking for smaller children, but there weren't any. So we were the next in line. You had to be under 17, I think, around that age before we could go. But this time,